Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening, and thank you one and all for spending some time with us, and wherever you are, whenever you are. It's always exciting for me knowing that there are people all over the planet that tune in, and I hope enjoy and get something out of all this. So welcome. And our guest tonight is Rebecca Gamble, who was on 2 weeks ago talking about where she went in Central America on her adventures. But tonight she's going to talk about the experiences, or at least some of the experiences. So I'm looking forward to hearing those stories. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And in the United States, last week was extraordinary. There were several major court decisions that changed so many things. The biggest one being that gay marriage is now legal in all 50 states. And I'll come back to that in a minute. But this also happened at the same time that there was a horrific terrorist attack. A young man went into a church, actually sat there with the prayer group for an hour before he pulled his gun out, and he killed 9 people. Was a white man who had found on the internet a lot of information about white supremacy and the history of all of that, got very, very angry about it, and went to a historic black church in South Carolina specifically to make a point. Just a horrible event. And the backlash, the conversations that have been going on for the past week on, you would think that there wouldn't be two sides to this, but there certainly are, have been really amazing. One of the things that came out of it, there is a flag that is representative of the South in the U.S. Civil War. So for people that are in another country, you may not even be aware of this part of our history, but there was a very long, bloody war between the southern states and the northern states that had to do with slavery and ending slavery. And there is a flag that was the Confederate battle flag, which wasn't very important during the war. But a terrorist group called the Ku Klux Klan, which would periodically do things to scare and manipulate black people all over the South, and I won't go into the horrible details, took on that Confederate battle flag as their emblem. And it was around for a while, and then it disappeared. And in the course of history unfolding, there was a court decision that the schools in the South would have to be desegregated. There had been separate schools, separate bathrooms, separate washrooms, separate lunch counters for black people and white people. And the federal government said, no, you have to, separate but equal is not okay. We are going to have the black kids in the white schools, and everybody is going to go to school together. Well, that was a very intense time, shall we say. At that point, that Confederate battle flag turned up again. All of a sudden, it was all over the place again. And it was a way for the Ku Klux Klan and its sympathizers to basically say, be careful, the violence is still there. We have not disappeared. So in the course of responding to this act of terrorism this week, one of the things that came up is the Confederate battle flag being taken down from many public buildings and monuments in the South. Almost every retailer online and in department stores has taken all of the merchandise with the Confederate battle flag. That's a popular symbol in the South. And the question was, is it about the history of the South and pride about being from the South and the that history, or is it really a symbol of terrorism? And that's a big argument down there. But in any case, it was moving along. And this is much more complicated and a longer story, but something struck me in the middle of this, kind of a non sequitur, but Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, in studying how people deal with grief, came up with five stages of grief. She said that people go through denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and eventually acceptance of whatever it happens to be. And we saw that clearly with the events that happened, the terrorist attack in the church. And that made perfect sense. And then there was a backlash from the people who said, no, don't take down our flag and don't take away this thing that we want that has always been part of our lives and don't call us names and all of that. And they were going through the exact same stages of grief as if they had had a loss, because they did. They went through denial and anger and bargaining, and at this point they're pretty depressed. And that was a revelation for me. On both sides of any very emotional change that happens, there will be people that are going through the stages of grief. And the stages of grief are very subtle, and they don't necessarily go in order. And there's a lot of information about this. But anytime there's a very emotional public or private event, people will go through those stages. And that's true even if something that you intentionally created. You decide you're going to move, or you're going into a new relationship, or any number of other changes that you might see as good and something that you set out to do. It still means that something that always has been a certain way is dying. There's a part of your life that is never going to be the same. And people will go through the stages of grief even while they're going through elation about something new happening. And this has been a revelation for me. I'm going to write an article for themagichappens.com. We need to respect and honor and take care of each other as this is going on both sides of every argument, because it always is. There are always people that are grieving, and they don't even know that they're grieving. And that was a startling revelation for me this week. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing and bit of bizarre history of the United States. Let's have some fun with our guest, Rebecca Gamble. Thanks so much for being on the show again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We're going to have fun. We're going to hear your stories.
Yeah, we are going to have fun. You know what? Actually, what you were saying there was reminding me of a lot of the emotional process that happened for me while I was in Peru and Bolivia. As you watch yourself change, you know, and we talk about the inner alchemical process pretty frequently in the kind of work that we do. Mm-hmm. You go through a lot of those different forms of the different aspects of grieving as you're letting who you are go and moving into who you can be and who you are becoming.
Right.
And there was the whole trip for me was very much so about leaving behind who I had been up to that point and coming back someone totally different and more ready to pick up the mantle of what I was going to be doing in my community. But I was there for quite a while, and we tried to cover the more concrete things in the last show, and we only covered the first 3 days.
I know. I can't even imagine all the stuff that you did there. It was just so full.
You know, and I didn't even tell you in detail the first 3 days. So but I picked out a couple different experiences, that things that seemed very small to something that was very profound for me, and just how the change happened every day, differently every day. And there were three of us on the trip. We had a very small group. And how we all experienced that. It was just this beautiful, personalized experience. Now, I was telling you before the show that we're planning to take a group out next year in the fall. We're going to keep that pretty small, too, as compared to these groups. We're going to shoot for between 10 and 20 people. But no more than that, even though most of the groups I've seen down there are 30 or more, because it's just a very personal experience. It's very intense and very personal.
And I would think that for some of those experiences, having the support of having fewer people that need to be supported by each of the leaders and teachers makes a huge difference.
Exactly.
People in a group of 35 or 40 are not getting the same attention as you were getting with the three of you and your teacher.
Right. And what happens, too, is it becomes a tourist thing. You know, right. So many of the groups out to Peru are one thing or another. They're going into the jungle and they're doing ayahuasca, which is not what I did. Or they're going to see all the sacred sites, and it's very touristy. They go and see as many of them as they can, and they take lots of pictures, but a lot of them don't really receive the teachings there. What we did was we went to see all these sacred sites, but we also got the teachings and had time to sit with the different places and feel the energy and allow it to change us. So you don't really see trips like that too often. It was really fantastic. And for me, to go down there, I was going because I felt that the trip was an answer to a prayer I had made. I didn't even look at the itinerary. I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know why I was there. I didn't even know where I was going to be every day.
sounds like walkabout to me.
Yeah, right. So one of the places that we went to, one of the temples, there was, it's hard to even explain it in words. There was like a large stone where one of the ancient teachers had embodied into the stone. And it was really beautiful. The side of the stone had a face coming out of it. And the front of it had like a seat carved there with another little step. And really how this worked was the person needing help or the person who wanted to meet the ancient teacher would sit in this chair carved into it. And on the step beside it, their teacher, their support system could sit there with them. On the other side of the stone, there was like a hollow where someone who was trained to sing in such a way that it would help put people between the worlds would sit there and sing. And my teacher demonstrated that for us, and it was pretty intense. He only did this for maybe 3 or 4 seconds, but we got the point very quickly.
No bad.
Right, yeah. But at this stone, now, he did not sit there and sing while we did this, but this was one of the experiences I wanted to share, was he said, you know, we went to the temple, he showed us around, and then he took us to the stone and said, you know, I want you to go ahead and sit there. We had the teachings and all that. Sit there and have your experience. So the three of us took turns there, and this is something you can do when you don't have 30-something people, is everyone can sit at a stone and experience it. And for me, I had gone down there partially without even understanding why I was going down there to be deepened. I had come to a place with taking care of my community where there simply wasn't enough of me. I didn't have enough energy, and I didn't have the physical body strength to do everything I needed to do. And part of that had been because growing up, I had these horrible health issues and had disconnected from my body and my body had starved in energy for, you know, the first 3 chakras were totally shut down when I got into this kind of work. And what was happening was the pathways where energy flows through the body had not developed to be wide enough in my system, and they had not developed to be deep enough. So part of the reason I went down there, and I was always afraid of going to Peru. I never wanted to go to Peru. And now I know why. It really deepened me. And my experience on this rock was part of that deepening. When I sat down on this stone, I found myself, and closed my eyes, I found myself in this place of darkness like velvet, you know, and aware of everybody on the stone, but not really. And it felt like an infinite pooling in all directions, something that just kept going for forever in all directions. And I didn't quite want to step forward. There was a sense of needing to step forward. And I kind of held back and was like, you know, I'm just a little girl. What are you, what are you suggesting here? And it was, and there was the sound of a voice that said, come forward. And so I did. And for me, it was like an infinite deepening, and that just went on for forever. And the sense of, I could see my body kind of behind me in the distance. And it was like there were cords that were being pulled out of the body and made wider and made deeper and put back into the body. And the blueprint, a lot of people call it the Akasha of the body, the blueprint of the energy in the body being stretched and expanded and put back into the body. And I was, as I was watching all of this, I was kind of realizing that part of the mistake I had been doing was I had been giving my own energy and then replenishing it in a lot of the different sessions and a lot of the work I was doing, simply doing too much for what I was able to do. And I had been doing that because this channels hadn't been open or wide enough. And once it seemed as if, I don't even know that it seems that it was done. It just, it, there was a sense of the end of this process. So it it finished widening all these things. I sat back down in my body and it felt, you know, completed. And then I felt myself reunified with my body and opened my eyes and thanked the stone and left a little offering there. And then the other two were able to, I was not the first one. I think I was the second person to sit on the stone. But then they were able to continue with their experiences sitting on the stone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just these incredible things in that area where you can have, it was intense getting up from the stone and walking away. I felt like there was more of me and it didn't feel like it was all being used. Like things were starting to pour into parts of my body I didn't feel before.
Mm-hmm.
And I did put on quite a bit of weight, even though my proportions didn't change when I came back, we noticed. I've been really fascinated by that lately. I started working with body image issues. And what I noticed was I started measuring, I started weighing people, doing soul retrievals and then weighing them again, and then letting them weigh themselves again, like a week later or every day for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing how fascinating it is that, that it's actually not that uncommon for people to put on weight or lose weight according to what we do energetically, which is just fascinating to me because their bodies don't change at all, except sometimes they look brighter.
Right.
And then I found out there's been studies about measuring the weight of the soul, and they found that the soul actually has weight in some of these studies, and it's a total tangent in a different direction, but it's beautiful. Right. Something to Google later, I guess. So while it's, the
amount of weight they came up with is less than an ounce, but yeah.
Right. Now while the others were sitting on the rock and everything, my teacher told me to go ahead and go around the bend, that there was something to explore out there. And here there are caves, tons of caves all through this particular temple. And what that is it's the labyrinth of the mind. It's the physical representation of the labyrinth of the mind. And I thought I heard part of the caves in the land breathing. And I was frightened. So, of course, every time I'm frightened, I have to go into something, right? So I was afraid. So I walked into the cave. You're laughing, but you do it too. it was like the caves were breathing into me and into my chest and expanding me. And it ached. My chest and my arms and everything just ached. It didn't stop all day. And then he took us through another cave. And there was, it was like a passage from place to place in the temple. And he told us there were three of these caves that he knew of that were very long. And one was from that temple to Cusco, which was more than 17 miles away.
Wow.
Right. And it turns out some of these caves have been shut off because people have gone in to explore them and never come back one after another. So they're very long. They're very dark. And actually what he said to us was, put your right hand over your head and your left hand on the wall and make sure you don't switch hands, because if you switch hands and you follow the other side, I don't know where that goes.
Right.
Like, don't switch hands. Follow your left hand along the wall so you know where you're going. But here, one of the things that I have struggled with the last year as I'm trying to heal is my fear of the energy of the Dark Mother and that aspect of female energy. And I had a very traumatic birth. And trying to heal a lot of my emotions and experiences around birthing and carrying children and mothering in general. There's been a lot of emotion there for me over the past year. So I go into this cave and putting the left hand up and that whole thing. And it was absolutely terrifying. It was, for me, bringing up all of those issues going down into the ground, which of course we know psychologically will bring up issues like that. And as I got down into there, I cannot explain the darkness. I can't. Okay. Part of what I did when I started to feel very overwhelmed and frightened because of the emotions it was bringing up for me. So part of what I did when I'm in a lot of darkness like that is I close my eyes, because it's always dark in there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I figured I would close my eyes for a minute. It would be dark. I would be okay. The only thing was it did not seem as dark behind my eyelids as it did in the cave. So
yeah, I hate when that happens.
It was not comforting. I was like, I'll close my eyes and this will be normal, but it still wasn't normal. And I'm not sure how that's possible, but that was what the experience felt like. So here we're going through the cave and with my eyes open, and when I came out of the cave on the other side, first off, I can't tell you what it was like to see that bit of daylight coming through the stones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still processing. I've been back for almost a month and I'm still processing a lot of that aspect of that part of the experience. But coming out of that, it was very cleansing and almost like ink that had seeped into you and then sucked out and pulled everything like it out with it.
Hmm.
So like the darkness had seeped in and then pulled all of it out and pulled anything that it had touched with it, almost like, you know, the tides washing something away. But a little more intense, because of course it was the earth element. But I was the first one going through the cave. And so while the other two were coming out, and thank goodness one of them thought to take a picture of the opening of the cave coming out. And that's the picture that I posted on the event page on Facebook. But I was sitting on the ground on the other side trying to figure out where my body was after that, because of the emotion of that experience for me. So then when he starts telling us, you know, there are caves 17 miles long and longer, I was going, no way. Ain't no way.
Yeah. Doing pitch black dark for 17 miles.
And don't change hands.
Right. Or turn around.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I can't even imagine. But apparently, and I can't even imagine what it would be like to explore all of these caves and these passages and everything. And he kept telling me there's so many of them, and some of these ones have been closed off, and, you know.
Right.
And once they haven't even explored yet, they don't know where they go yet. And he's going, you know, don't go to the right, because I don't know where that goes.
Yeah, that always makes you feel good, right?
Right. Only in Peru. But it was beautiful though.
We're going to be going to the break, and I want to make sure people know how to find you online. Why don't you give us your web address?
Okay. It's RebeccaGambleHolisticPractitioner.com. RebeccaGambleHolisticPractitioner.com.
Fantastic. And I want to hear the rest of this story and all the other stories, and we will do that when we come back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. Here on Empower Radio, this is David Franklin Farkas with the Farkas Files. My guest is Rebecca Gamble, and we're going to go on more adventures with her. Don't go nowhere.
Many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I've been.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg. Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website, too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Rebecca Gamble, recently back from her adventures in Peru and telling us at least a little bit of what she experienced down there. And the caves, I can't even imagine.
No, you can't. You think, you know, you watch them on the television or you go to caves here in the United States. And you think you get darkness. No, we don't know darkness. So those were kind of the first two experiences that I wanted to share with you, because something as simple as sitting on a rock and traveling mm-hmm. from place to place in a temple, you know, we were only at the temple for a few hours. and there were other experiences in that one temple. So just the experiences were not difficult to come by, and it was not something that was horribly strenuous all the time. Okay, there were some days where we definitely earned our dinners that night in the amount of exertion we put into what we were doing. But a lot of it was really not that difficult. It was like it was just sitting there waiting for us, which it really is. And some of these places have been designed to be just like that down there.
Right.
But those were sort of more having my energy system altered, which was fantastic. I'd been trying to figure out how to do that, and then I didn't have to figure it out anymore. Having my energy system altered and going through a lot of the emotional aspects of what I was dealing with at that time was sort of an example of the physical and the emotional things that could happen down there. I picked out two others. I wanted to talk about my experience in the hotel, actually, when we arrived in Machu Picchu. And I wanted to talk about my experience with the Wachuma ceremony. When we got to Machu Picchu, our rooms were fantastic. Our hotels were wonderful everywhere we went. But the room had out the back window, which the whole one wall was windows that slid, and a door that went out onto a balcony that went over these, you could sit there and there were these beautiful rapids there. Lots of water, lots of water energy in Machu Picchu. And this beautiful mountain out back, because they're everywhere. I mean, you're in the mountains, obviously.
Right.
But I went out and I had been feeling kind of overwhelmed and a little over-socialized. I'm quite an introvert, believe it or not. So when I'm around people, I have a tendency to need a lot of alone time to kind of recharge after that.
Mm-hmm.
And rooming with someone, you don't get that enough alone time to really recharge. And I decided I wanted to just sit with the water on the balcony for a while. And I did for a good 2 hours. And some of the things that really sank in for me, I wrote about it in my journal. I've got it in front of me. It's half a page long. I think I'm just going to read it to you because it makes more sense that way. So I wrote why I was in Machu Picchu. And I'm sitting on my balcony on a business trip in Peru, and it hits me that this is real. And I'm actually here, and I'm actually doing this, and this can be my life. I'm free to just be happy. The society I grew up in was wrong about me. I don't have to live like that anymore, and I can do whatever I want with my life. And part of the background here is growing up, I very much so overvalued the elders in my community, which I grew up in a very fundamentalist Christian group. And as a young female who was also sick, you know, there was a lot of being taught that I couldn't do things, that I had to hurry up and make sure I was beautiful and smart, but not too smart, and intelligent, but not too intelligent, and really get running a house because I needed to get married because that was what was going to enable me to do anything with my life. That I was very powerless on my own. And over the years, possibly because I was little and you're easily programmed, I really came to believe that. So here I was in Machu Picchu on a business trip for a company that I owned, to experience a different form of healing that I could do in that company that focuses on healing. And it was very unreal for me. So continuing with the writing, I wrote, and I cried, and I laughed, and I cried some more, and it felt like a heavy backpack just fell off of me, and my whole body feels released. I feel like I can truly be free to be happy. One of my great weaknesses is that I believe my elders and trust their experience. Another is I have a tendency to always ask what God wants for me. The thing is, the elders program me to believe that I'm not powerful, that I can't do things with my life because I'm from the low class, and I'm bad for the things I can do, and I can't be anything without a man. And it's all wrong. This idea of what God wants from me, he wants me to be happy. That means it's time for me to ask myself what I want for me.
Right.
So it sounds so very obvious, for me, it was quite a switch. I've always been overly giving and overly providing for other people, which I think is something we see pretty commonly with women in our society, especially people who come from poor backgrounds like I did. My family lived pretty well, frankly, but we were always very, very far under the poverty line. And my mother was excellent in making sure that she and I were provided for. But there was still the constant teaching that, you know, you're never going to get anywhere between mm-hmm. all the factors that were going against me. And what you were talking about with the five stages of grief, I went through all of those sitting on the porch of my hotel room. Mm-hmm. I was in Machu Picchu laughing at, you know, I probably seemed like a psychopath. Thank goodness we had the rapids outside making all the noise, because I'm sitting on my balcony and I'm crying and then I'm laughing and then I'm crying and then I'm angry and then I'm crying again and then I'm laughing again. But what was amazing to me was after that, I was able to go out with the group that night and just have a good time. I didn't have the sense of having to balance joy with pain. I had had this thing where I would think about painful things and happy situations to kind of balance it almost. And that was the moment where I was really healed just by the experience in a way that since then I have been able to allow myself to simply be happy and feel powerful. Mm. And in a way of, I had reclaimed a lot of my power in the past year after coming out of an abusive relationship. You might have read it in the first book, and how a person can do that and recover that way. But this was like allowing myself to be empowered with joy. Joy had always been difficult for me. And since then, I've been able to simply enjoy life and have that joy. It's been really beautiful. But to think that you need a ceremony or you need a crazy anything or a difficult anything, you know, this was the power of the mountains down there. You know, they talked to the Apu down there, and to have that connection, to sit there and talk to the mountains, talk to the water, it really is a healing experience in itself.
Yep. And that's something that people in Western countries, if we can call it that, like that, don't have the experience of going to a place that's a place where you're supposed to sit and have the place transform you. And that people have done that for thousands of years, and all of that is still there from the first ceremony to the last person that sat there. It's very, very powerful, but it's not something that most of us have ever experienced.
And because we've not experienced it, we don't understand it as a nation. So everything mm-hmm. that the Apache tribe is going through right now, with trying to keep, don't even get me started, but with people not understanding, why is the land sacred? Why can't we just mine out from under it? And you can still have the land. It's not all that destroyed. You can still enjoy, you know, the surface. They don't understand.
Right.
I talked some about the protests that was going on in Peru while I was down there. It's over the same thing, copper mine, the same mm-hmm. exact thing. And they just don't understand the power of these mountains, the power of the land and the power of the water, and how much that can do for the human soul.
And one of the things that struck me recently is that the dark core of capitalism is that everything and everybody is a commodity.
Right.
That the value is the amount of money you can extract from it and how inexpensively you can do that without having that larger sense that people in places have profound value that goes back to the dawn of time that can never be rebuilt or replaced if you disturb it.
Right. And to understand that, you know, we all love our families. Maybe not everyone believes in God, but we all love our families. And the land, as it heals you in this way, and as you experience it in this way, as you talk to it, this becomes also your family.
Right.
So for people to just walk in and say, I'm going to mine this place and make some money off of it, you need to understand it's like you're violating someone's family.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Oh, so,
and what's amazing is that's true in indigenous cultures all over the world. It's not a native. It's not an American thing. It's everywhere that there are indigenous shamanic tribes. They look at the earth and all of creation and all of life in the same way.
You know, we as industrialized America, we haven't lost the ability to feel that. It's just having the opportunity to, and what we put our focus on with our children and through our growing up and our experiences as adults. So I do want to, I know we're running out of time here. I do want to cover the Wachuma ceremony because everybody always wants to hear about it. So, okay. Wachuma, also called Zemp, is a cactus. I had no idea I was going to be working with this plant when I went down there. Like I said, I did not even look at the itinerary. So my experiences were when he told us we're going to go to this valley that has to do with the Akashic Records and all of that sort of thing, and we're going to do this plant. I talked it over with my body that night and said, you know, do you want to do this? And it was like, I want to do this. So, okay, let's do this. And the next morning I woke up sick. I woke up really nauseous, couldn't eat. I ate very little, mostly liquids, and really my body was, I don't know if it was preparing or what the deal was, but I woke up with the beginnings of the sickness and I had not even touched the plant yet. So on the way to the valley, he gave us the first dose about halfway there, and I was sick instantly. By the time we got there, I was having trouble sitting up. I was nauseated. My legs were hurting. My body, my muscles felt like they were being ripped, all over me. And I was seeing, you know, I already have the open third eye, which helps me immensely when I'm doing healings with people. But, one of the issues there was I was seeing four different layers of the earth, like four different grounds. One was very watery. One was, you know, and he explained that as in their tradition, the belief is that you're seeing the different dimensions that lay over top of each other.
Right.
And one of the things that I do when that happens, when I'm not using a plant, because one of the downsides of having a third open eye, no one tells you about it, you experience that all the time. One of the things I will do is I will, I'll close my eyes, I'll feel my feet, and that helps me find where I'm going. Helps me find which floor I'm walking on with my body. And what was happening was I would close my eyes, and I would see three or four other ones, and it wasn't working. It was it was very disorienting. So then I go to get out of the vehicle. We park and we're there, and the other two people were given a second dose. He looked at me. He was like, "You don't need any more." I couldn't even walk, David. I couldn't even walk. So we get out of the thing.
At
and
least
I'm like,
you were with somebody that was experienced and knew what they were looking at. And they're like, yeah, okay,
which
it worked.
Important. Right. It's important. So I get out and I can't even walk. I'm bent over. In the meantime, there are spirits everywhere, like everywhere. And to me, they look like clouds and tall beings and, you know, stuff everywhere. And I wasn't sure I wanted to get out of the car. And Jamie, my teacher, he says, you know, he goes, it's okay, princess, which he calls all the women princess. It's so cute. He's like, it's okay, princess. He's like, I know these ones. It's okay. And I'm like, okay, dude, I'm really trusting you, and I've only known you for a week. So I got out of the car, was having so much trouble walking that while he gave them the other two the second dose, I got back in the car and sat there. And then he gave me a pouch with what felt like a stick in it. And he was like, you know, he was taking them up further into that part of the area, and he gave me the stick and says, follow us. And it was like the tearing started at the bottom of my feet and worked up my body. And by the time I was trying to walk up there, it was about in my intestines and my stomach. And I was going so slowly, I couldn't see the ground anymore. I was just, it was sheer willpower, putting one foot in front of the other. And then when I couldn't get any further, I simply could not get any further. One of the, you'll know what I'm talking about, but one of the half bird, half men people came and took the other end of the stick and pulled me up the mountain.
Mm.
I don't even know if I want to call it a mountain, but that area pulled me up these stones. And I got up so far and I got to this rock. And my teacher was there and I can't remember what he said. It was something like, you know, so how are you today or something like that? Cause you know, that's how it is. And I was like, I think I'm going to be sick. He's like, well, if you need to throw up, then throw up. I was like, I don't want to throw up. I put this in my body for a reason. He said, well, it'll be difficult. So I sat on the ground, but I couldn't move anymore. And I said, I don't think I should go any further because if I go further, I said, you know, I had been trying to overcome some of my autoimmune disease issues. And because of that, they had been flaring up for the past month. And I said, you know, a lot of this pain is exactly the muscles that clench up. And, you know, when they get really bad, I can't walk. You know, if I go any further and then you guys have to carry me, it's too far. And he's like, well, you know, you want to be sick or whatever, go lay on the rock. So I laid down on this rock. And it was horribly painful, ready to pass out painful. But I didn't. And I was remembering all these things. I was remembering having different experiences as a child and being put into traditional therapy, primarily because my father died when I was 4, and it was to help me with the grief. But then they were like, whoa, this chick sees things. What do we do with her?
Right.
Right,
and you were too young to realize you weren't supposed to tell them that.
Exactly! I had no idea I was supposed to keep my mouth shut. And I was thinking about this particular time where I had this one therapist who would let me draw pictures of what I saw and then talk to me from there. And I kept thinking about this one time. I was maybe 5, maybe 6. Not quite 6 yet, I don't think. But I was sitting there telling her, I don't have enough imagination to make all this up. I can't make it up. I don't have enough imagination. But then I remember starting to realize I was the only one seeing these things,
right,
and starting to believe them, that I was either crazy or I was making it up. And as I started to remember all that, I started to be able to open my eyes and sit up. And here I am on this rock overlooking. Now, the backstory here is when I was little, we had a bright yellow bush in the backyard that grew in such a way it made a cave with its blossoms. It was open in the middle. And I would go in, I would lay down under the roots. I would lay down there. I would sit up. I'd be in another area, another place. And that's where I would meet what I now recognize as guides, and they would teach me. So here I am on this rock. I sit up on the rock, and there I am in one of the places that I used to sit up in.
Mm-hmm.
And here it was, and I kept tapping my arm and my leg and everything off the rock to show me, like, physical body actually here. This is actually happening. But there in front of me was, on the one side, there was a circle of trees where I used to sit up under, where I would enter into the area. There's the carvings in the stones. There's the cave that I used to go into, and I knew there was a water flow in there, which there is. I knew the whole area because I'd been there so many times. And that took some processing. I just kind of sat on this rock and looked around me like, this is impossible. And then my teacher came down and I still couldn't walk. I kept trying to get up, you know, to move and distance myself from what was happening. So, of course, I couldn't move.
Right.
And he came down and I told him what was happening. And it started to actually hit me that a lot of the, in healing my autoimmune disease, we had healed a lot of the self-love issues, the getting to know oneself, you know, all of these things. And it really helped. But the sense of inner struggle and a lack of self-acceptance had never went away. And I would have these emotions when my sickness would flare up. And I had been in the process of trying to actually find the root cause and heal it when I went to Peru. And here it was, and I realized it. I had stopped believing myself. And here I had these, I had kind of accepted the idea that I'm just a freak that sees stuff. And it helps people. And I don't know why,
mm-hmm.
but it's, you know, but it's not real. And here I was and sat there with him. And I said, you know, Jamie, they don't see this stuff. And I was like, and I was saying, do you see this? And do you see that? And he was seeing all of it too. I said, mm-hmm. So you and I can see this, but they don't see this stuff. And he's going, right. And I'm like, how can they not? It's right there. And then he actually had me after I realized, like, no, this is real. And we talked about why it is that more people are starting to see these things and why people stop seeing them at all to begin with and what is changing with the energy of the planet. And how people like Jamie and I are both here to help people as they transition back into having more of these awarenesses.
Right.
Which I'm sure you've seen in your work too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people are starting to have these sensitivities again, and they don't know how to deal with them. And we have a society that does not deal with them at all.
Right. Or outright stigmatizes them.
Right. And helping, he had me help with the other two as they went through their experiences, which were totally unique to them. But we all three of us and my teacher were experiencing the same things. It was amazing to me was, if they're experiencing it, it has to be real. And I felt it looked like a shadow move out of the place where the pain would start. And since I've been back, I was dependent for 8 years on a nutrition product that I've used, and I have not taken it since. And I haven't done the blood work to see whether the condition is actually gone or not. But I went from, before I left, having to take that product every morning. And if I were a few hours late, getting very sick very quickly, I haven't had it in more than a month now.
That's fantastic. So, that's fantastic. Right. And of course, we're running out of time.
I know. But you get the gist. You get the good stuff.
There's always so much more of the stories, and maybe there's a third episode to this series. We'll see. Thank you so much. It's so unusual that people, especially so recently after an experience, can come and share this. And thank you so much for being willing to do that.
Thanks for letting me talk about it, because people need to hear about these things to know they're not alone as they start to remember all of this aspect of being human that we've forgotten.
Right. Absolutely. So my guest tonight has been Rebecca Gamble. Give us your website again.
It is Rebecca Gamble, holisticpractitioner.com, Rebekahgamble, holisticpractitioner.com.
Fantastic. Do you have more adventures planned, or not until you take a group down there?
Well, the second half of the training is actually in Ireland. The teachings are to show how a medicine tradition in Peru and the medicine tradition in Ireland can work together. So I actually have an ancestral line that did this sort of work in Ireland. So I'm kind of looking forward to being able to reconnect to that ancestral connection while I learn more. So that'll be in the spring. So that should be interesting.
And we'll expect you to be back and talk about it. But until then, thank you so much
also,
for being on the show again.
The second book in the Talking Stick Diaries is coming out this fall.
Oh, fantastic.
September, October. Yeah, so that's exciting.
Excellent. So, again, my guest is Rebecca Gamble, holistic practitioner, and we will be hearing more of her adventures at some point. Thank you so much for being on the show. And if you happen to get curious about who this guy David is, you can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every technology I could come up with for you to get in touch with me, including a scheduling calendar. I do a free 20-minute assessment of whatever is going on with a person, place, or situation, and we can see how my work might be helpful. If you want more information about the show, it's hiding cleverly enough at thefarkasfiles.com. We've been doing the show for 4.5 years, so there are hundreds of interviews with amazing people that you can plug into. And Empower Radio has shows 24/7, positive messages, incredible people, and you can listen to it on empowerradio.com, iTunes podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, I think. So please take advantage of that. There's so much good stuff on Empower Radio. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.